101.7 FM, 710 KEO. Micah McCarty, Aaron off. She will be back day after tomorrow. Scheduled to be back. Jeff Luce in studio. And on the Jack Spring Electric Newsmaker Hotline, Army veteran Shay Wilkes. Shay, you're captain, right?
Yes, that was my ring when I got out.
Okay, yes. So retired. But you still work for the VA Medical Center.
I do, yes.
As a patient advocate, tell me exactly what your title is.
I'm a clinical social worker by profession. I work with the military to VA transition care team. We kind of work with veterans that are coming off active duty, whether medical retire, just leaving the military and kind of transitioning from military care to VA care. So we help them with that transition. Make it go smoothly.
Okay. Now, Shay, let's go back. I think it goes back to, is it 2014 when you first kind of became involved?
You know, what's funny is that's when the wait list scandal started. So technically, yeah, but I actually reported wait list to the Office of Inspector General at our facility 1 year prior to Phoenix even coming out. I guess that was the big news break with Phoenix and their wait list. But I did it a year before at our facility to the IG. And then I kind of tagged on to that with my reports. And I was like, hey, I already reported this. And then it kind of took off from there.
And now for those that don't remember or aren't familiar with the wait list scandal, give us a little bit of background on what that was. I know veterans were waiting inordinate amount of time.
Oh, yeah, months, 6, 7, 8 months, even longer at times. And the numbers were showing everything was great, that they weren't waiting. And, you know, it just wasn't true. So the wait list was one way that the organization as a whole in VA, and they were doing it everywhere, had developed to kind of hide it. So, you know, instead of putting it in the actual numbers, there was one electronic wait list online that showed zero wait time. And but they had little paper lists that they were using. And there are different ways that they were manipulating the numbers. Our system, our scheduling system at the time called Vista, you could go in and out, and there were little glitches in there that you could make it show zero wait times and things like that when actually the wait times were much longer. And you had people, depending on what their medical condition was, you know, that were dying waiting on appointments and stuff. And, you know, anytime you wait, especially for something like mental health, and what we do as working with veterans, especially at a time of combat, you know, that's just not a good thing. So,
now, you said veterans were literally dying waiting on appointments.
Yes, yes. And that's what broke it big into the story, like in Phoenix and stuff. So, you know, I mean, obviously some medical things are very important, and time is very crucial in those, whether it's cancer or some cardiac things like that. And, you know, and that's where it was. They weren't reading results and stuff. If you look at a lot of the IG reports and stuff like that, that's what was happening. And you know, the problem with it all, and the problem that's still – we see today is the VA never admits anything. They never admit anything. Obviously, they attack me. I don't know, probably people. Usually, the messenger in the VA system gets attacked and they get shunned. I just happen to survive because, you know, I don't back down. And if anybody knows me, they know my personality. And I'm like, hey, I'm here.
I know you. That's why I laugh, Jay.
Yeah. I mean, I'm a veteran advocate. It's not about Shay Wilkes. And you know, that's why I always keep it about the veteran, and it's not about me. And then if you keep it about the veteran and trying to get what's right for the veteran, then you can last. It's a tough fight with this organization. It's a it's the largest gorilla that I've ever taken on in my life. And you know, they can come after you in many different ways.
That had to take a lot of courage to be able to do this. That, I mean, as you were going through this, I mean, what was the hardest, like, personal or professional consequence that you faced in this?
Well, I'll never get promoted. I'll never have opportunities. Mm-hmm. I knew that going in. You know, it's something that you get shunned. One thing I've taken out of it, though, where a lot of people that do it, or a lot of people don't do it because they're scared. And this is an organization that has the backing. I mean, this is federal government, man. I mean, I was put under false investigations. I mean, they had me, you know, they were investigating me for having a wait list that didn't exist. One of my lawyers said, hold on, you're investigating him for having a list that's not even supposed to exist?
So that doesn't
make, but that's the federal government, man. And, you know, they play by their own rules. I mean, you know, it's like I had an interview with the IG one time and they recorded the whole thing, but I was telling them how they were manipulating wait times and all that for, I mean, hours. And then they come back and they tell my lawyer and I, oh, well, the batteries went dead after 5 minutes. Well, of course they did. That's when I was outlining how the government was cheating the numbers. So, you know, it just, it's, man, I could tell you some stories. I thought about writing a book and I still may one day. So.
We're talking with retired Captain, Army Captain Shea Wilkes with the VAMC here in Shreveport. And the reason that, that we bring this up, Shea, is because there was a new report from the OIG, the Office of Inspector General, that still found multiple deficiencies in patient care at the Overton Brooks VA Medical Center in Shreveport.
Yeah, yeah, that came out summer. The incident happened a while back. I think, you know, I can't tell you exactly, but, you know, it's a, man, it's sad. I mean, it really is sad, and I'll say that. It's sad for the employees that try so hard, but the problem is we're in a system that's outdated. We're in a system that doesn't want to change. We're in a system that fights change. It is the textbook of what we hear as government bureaucracy. Your leadership core, I'll be quite honest with you, and I'm going to be really, I'll say 75%, but it's more than that, of leadership, they couldn't survive outside the system. It's sad. They don't train leaders right. I mean, I've been in these leader programs. But like I said, I was shunned. I knew when I came forward 10 years ago, I never would get any opportunities, anything like that. Now, I do have a strong voice to this day because, you know, I testified in front of the Senate. My case went to, it was President Obama's desk at that time. And you know, so I still do have a strong voice and advocate. But you can't abuse that privilege. So many whistleblowers abuse that privilege and they make it about themselves. And, you know, this is a case, unfortunately, I would like to tell you that it's a single incident, but we see things like this all the time where, you know, is a lot of pass the buck. I mean, there's a lot of things that happen. And then when you bring them up, you just kind of get shunned. And if you're not a strong personality person kind of like me, it's really, there's nothing you can do. It's like, okay, well, you tell your chain of command and they're like, okay, well, this is not a problem. We're great. We know we're great. Pat yourself on the back and we'll move on from it. And you just pass it and pass it. And, you know, it's everything you hear about the government. Honestly, Mike, you know, I was watching All in the Family and Archie Bunker. I mean, this is recently I was watching a rerun and he says, oh, they're a civil servant. They're not going to get fired. Yeah. I mean, everybody
and
knows.
And that goes back to the 70s. Right.
Yeah. Right. Why is that right, Mike? Why is it that you can't get rid of people you need to get rid of?
Yeah. Well, I don't
know. They would get rid of me if they could, I mean, tomorrow.
I don't understand tenure in the college system, so.
Right. None of that makes sense. But you also established the VA Truth Tellers, right?
Yeah, and I want to go into that.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, and Shea, hold on just a second. We got to take a break. If you hold on with me, okay. I want to go into that after we take a break. Captain Shea Wilkes on the Jack Spring Electric Newsmaker Hotline. Jeff Luce in for Aaron, 101.7 FM, 710 Keel.
Back with more McCarty on 101.7 FM and 710 Keel.
Jeff Luce in for Aaron, Captain Shea Wilkes with the VA Medical Center on the Jack Spring Electric Newsmaker Hotline. Shea, I want to ask before we move forward, You said this first, when you first started with this, it was during the Obama administration. Have you seen a change this year, or have you seen, are there any improvements since Trump has taken office?
Let me explain to you, this organization outlasts administration.
It doesn't matter who's in office there.
They survive, and they're very crafty at how they do it. Not a lot of people know the inside of how it works and everything, and that's how, including Congress, and Congress has all kinds of trouble getting stuff from them. But you do see changes in administrations, and the new VA secretary we have, he speaks a great game, and I really believe what he's saying. I've been in this, I hate to say fight, but that's what it is, for over a decade. And I know how the whole system kind of works from top to bottom and things like that. And, you know, and that's what kind of scares everybody the most about it. And I have contacts in D.C. and in different places like that. So, you know, I have a pretty strong voice. And I like the way that it's going now, because it's focusing on the access, and the Access Act is something you can look at and folks can look at out there, veterans and stuff. And, you know, I know a lot of veterans say they're happy with VA care, and that's fine and everything. But, you know, we don't have a choice as a veteran. I'm 100% veteran, and I can't choose. When I go to the VA, if I use that, now I have private insurance too, which I use now more than I do VA, to be quite honest with you, the VA healthcare.
Mm-hmm.
And, it's just the VA is just too, I mean, my opinion, I've told people at the highest level this, so it's nothing I'm hiding or anything. I mean, I've told Congress and all of them, I said the VA is long waits for average care at best.
Well, we did get a message, and you said there are those that are happy with the care. We got a message on the Shreveport Security Systems message board that said, Overton Brooks leads the country in healthcare access in neurosurgery wait times. And I asked, do you mean leads the country in the longest wait times or the shortest? And he said, no, shortest. We complete results in less than a week from receipt, the best in the country.
Yeah, I mean, and those are numbers that they come up with, and that may be. But here's the deal. If you believe any numbers that come out of the VA, I mean, you can believe them. But the majority of times, there's just different ways, and you have to get into those. But, I mean, I don't believe any numbers that come out, because I know how they manipulate them, and I see how they manipulate them. I know how they maneuver consults. I know how they clear consults and schedule. I know how they do that. But the key to this is getting it better is, you know, that there's no competition. So when I go to VA, I can't pick my doctors. Mike, you can pick your doctor. You can go through a list on your insurance or whatever it may be, and you pick. I can't. They assign it.
Mm-hmm.
If I want to change, if I want to fire my doctor, I can't. I have to stay with them, or I have to put in a change of provider, which is a joke process. I mean, and they look for every reason, trust me, they look for every reason not to allow you to change the provider.
And when you talk I'm sorry, go ahead.
And then, you know, you just don't get to, I mean, if you go to a provider, if I use my private insurance and I go to a provider and they make me sit here and wait and I don't feel like it's a good fit or whatever, I can go find another one in my list of providers that have opted into that system. You can't have the VA. Why can't I? You know, that's my thing. Why do I have to choose the VA? I'm the one that earned the right to do this or that. Why can't you say, hey, why can't I choose VA, or why can't I choose to go outside the VA? I mean, we could sit here. I've argued with these people on their numbers. I don't even allow them to bring their numbers into meetings if they want, or even be an argument.
Well, because
you know, that's fine. Neurology can throw their numbers out there. But I tell you what, let me come in there and break your numbers down, and let me see how you're doing it, and let me look at your consults and stuff like that. And they don't want to hear that.
Well, when you're talking about the numbers, I understand why you don't trust them, because of the secret wait list. But was the motivation?
Any numbers that come out of the VA are an absolute joke.
What's the motivation?
I've been in this system long enough to know their ways. And I'm not going to get fired up, because I'm not arguing with their nonsense anymore. So, you know, I don't have to.
Yeah, what do you feel like is the motivation for them to cover up these numbers? I mean, you know, because there's two sides to this coin.
Because
they
don't want to work. I mean, you want to get me fired up? I'll tell you right now. You know how many people on the outside, how many providers on the outside see?
My buddy
is a primary care. He says he has to see 30 to 40 to keep the doors open. I can promise you right now, we don't see that. We see 9 or 10, and I see them complain about it.
That's significantly different. Yeah. So the
even said it in Congress. He said, you know, we don't have a manpower problem. We have an efficiency problem.
Wow. Yeah.
And I'm not going to say that's on the providers. That's on a lot of the dumb stuff in the bureaucracy that we have those providers do.
Now, Sherry,
you watch, but it's not. Yeah, go ahead, Mike.
Along with the VA Office of Accountability and Whistleblower Protection, you've also co-founded a new, like Jeff mentioned, the 50-member VA Truth Tellers organization. Tell me about that.
Well, it's kind of evolved. That's how we got things going years ago. There's power in numbers. You know, and we said the VA likes to single you out and attack you. So the way we got things going in Congress and them, even we scared everybody because, you know, we had like 40 people. We had 40 people saying, hey, we're not lying. This is it. Because you never get the VA to admit anything. They've never admitted that they even had wait lists, honestly. If you go back and look, they won't admit that they do anything wrong. That's it. You'll never, they'll attack you, but they'll never admit anything that they do wrong. Never. And, you know, that's the way that we did it. There's power in numbers and others out there. I try to always tell people when they come to me and say, how do you go about reporting this and that? I said, well, if there's a group of you, you need to do it as a group. Because if they got you individually, they'll rip you apart.
Shay Wilkes with the VA Medical Center. Thank you. Look, I appreciate you jumping on talking with Shay. And we'll keep up on it.
No problem. They'll be fussing at work today, so that's fine. No problem. Anytime y'all want.
We'll talk to you soon.
I'm up for it. They don't like arguing with me because I know their games and I know how it works and, you know, I make sense and they don't like that. So.
Well, hopefully we'll get something changed. Thank you, Shay. Talk to you soon.
I hope so. We're still fighting, man.
All right. 101.7 FM, 710 Keel, Mike and McCarthy.
Let's get back to the show with Mike and McCarty on 101.7 FM and 710 Keel.
Louisiana legislature voting to push back elections. We'll speak with Dr. Jeffrey Sato from LSUS about that very subject right after the break. 101.7 FM, 710keel.com.
More breaking news and trending talk with Mike and McCarty on 101.7 FM and 710 Keel.
FM, 710 Keel, and on the free Keel app, you can take us anywhere you go. Mike and McCarty, Jeff Luce in for Aaron. And on the Jack Spring Electric Newsmaker Hotline this morning, Dr. Jeffrey Sato from LSUS joining us, political science professor. Thank you, Dr. Sato. Appreciate you joining us this morning.
Sure.
We're talking about the Louisiana Senate has voted to push back the 2026 election dates, hopefully waiting on the U.S. Supreme Court and their decision on the congressional lines. What say you? Is this a good idea?
I guess it kind of depends. The special session costs money, a potential change in election dates is going to cost money. At the same time, if the court rules early enough, then and it rules the way that apparently we looked at the arguments when the case was heard, not only a couple of weeks ago, but also earlier this year, it's probably going to end up invalidating the current map, and they'll need a new map. So, what price you pay to be in compliance with the Constitution?
Now, the Supreme Court, could they actually issue a new map, or would they turn it back to the Louisiana legislators?
Yeah, no, the court doesn't get involved in drawing their own maps. It would have to go back to the legislature, again, though, it depends on how early it happens. If it happens too late, so to speak, in the process, then there's this precedent that the court established almost 20 years ago that basically says we go with the old map for another couple years, and you fix it in the interim. The reason why they do this is because if you have these changes too late to when an election, when an election is going to occur, then it just creates a lot of administrative headaches. So they'll actually tolerate an unconstitutional map for that reason.
Is there any indication on a Supreme Court decision? Do you hear any rumblings?
No. If we go by history, it takes like last year when the court heard a handful of cases in October. It took on average about 4 months for the ruling to come out. Longest is about of the six cases, 5 months. A couple came out in a couple of weeks, but they were pretty different cases. Not rather big and complicated as this one is. So this is probably going to take longer. And if we look at the 4 months, assuming that's the average, then that would be right about at the time that the date changes are going, if they're made, and they're very highly likely to be made, that's about when they would kick in. So it'd be kind of right on the borderline.
Yeah, because they're looking, the elections are scheduled for April 18th and May 30th, and that would move them to 16th and June 27th.
Yeah, basically adding a month or so onto these. And so it gets kicked forward a month from that. So qualifying would be mid-February, and again, if the average from last year held, that's about when the court would be deciding the case. So, of course, then the legislature had to get in this special session and quickly draw a map. And they probably had a little more leeway than that because there's some administrative rulings that the Department of State can make in terms of the elections. So, for example, they might be able to shorten the petition gathering window, which actually will be longer this way, about a month longer, but they might be able to shorten that on the other end a little bit. So there might be a little more leeway than that, but it'd be cutting it close to if the average holds up, it'd be cutting close to getting a map out in time to be able to qualify constitutionally.
Do you feel like there are some long term ramifications if they do extend this?
Certainly. I mean, it could cause a totally different map in 2026. Than what we have right now, and the map that comes out of that almost certainly would not have two majority-minority districts out of the six. Most likely would have one. So, not only would we have different representation, obviously, but in the larger scheme of things, who knows, the election for the House may be so close that maybe one seat makes a difference. So could go down to that, could decide entirely the balance of power in the House of Representatives.
Okay, I've brought this up, and I've been told how stupid I am. I don't need to be told. But when you look at that congressional district map, Dr. Jeffrey Sado from LSUS, it's ridiculous going from South Shreveport all the way to Baton Rouge in a zigzag pattern. Why can't we just take a line down the center of the state and then horizontal lines and create, what is it, six different districts create them in that way, and whatever the population is, those are the representations. Why can't we do it that way?
There's some complication.
I know, I'm oversimplifying it, but.
Yeah, for one thing, the tolerance is, you have these incredibly small tolerances in terms of population deviations. They're generally in the single digits. So we're talking about basically 4.3 million people, and you have to draw six districts that basically vary by no more than nine people in the size in each district. So that's one thing that makes it complicated immediately. And then all sorts of other things. There are a number of traditional, what we might call traditional principles of reapportionment. So, for example, the one that's really probably going to kill this map is they totally busts up communities of interest. I mean, you take and divide the Baton Rouge into three different districts, Shreveport into two, and so on. And, I mean, the people that are living right next door to each other in large urban areas are getting put in different districts. So, there are a number of things you have to follow like that. And so it does make it a know, much more complicated than just simply taking like urban areas and emanating outwards and drawing. So, yeah, it can be complicated. And really what the court's trying to do with this decision is to try to balance out. There's a, on the one side, you say, well, you can't use race as a preeminent criterion unless there's some really compelling reason to do it, like some very current discrimination going on. But at the same time, you have to prevent that kind of discrimination from going on in the drawing of district lines. And so the Supreme Court is in, I think what they're going to do with this case is they're going to take some fairly vague and nebulous rules that are in conflict with each other when you push them to certain extremes, and they're going to, in essence, create more rules that will try to kind of be an umpire in terms of, well, all right, here's where the lines need to go. So adding some more specificity to it that is an attempt to try to prevent these conflicts, which you probably can't entirely prevent.
I'm even more confused now, Dr. Sano.
Well, that's why these consultants for reapportionment make hundreds of dollars an hour. You make hundreds of dollars an hour testifying in court about this too. So
right. So what are the, see, we know that the part of the argument is that it's a racial component, that it was drawn strictly to create a black district. And it's, what other criteria is the Supreme Court looking at? Or is that going to be the main criteria?
Well, it's probably going to be one criterion. You know, there have been some suggestions that they would the decision would get rid of that portion of the Voting Rights Act that allows race to be used in any way to draw district lines. They're probably not going to go that far, but they probably are. What they're going to do is put a lot more limitations on how it can be used. Again, really, the jurisprudence is such that you can really only use it in unfettered fashion if there's direct evidence that discrimination is going on now. And what kind of how the law has evolved or the way the courts have been using it is that even kind of like hypothetical situations, even if you can't prove there's an intent to discriminate, in the past, the jurisprudence said, all right, well, intent doesn't matter. If you think it, that's the practical effect of it, then we're going to declare it unconstitutional. I think the court's going to try to move away from that and try to establish a standard of, well, we've got to show some intent right here and right now, not what happened 60 years ago or whatever, but what's going on right now. And mm-hmm. if you can't find that, then we're not going to allow race to be used in the drawing of district lines.
Well, as Henry Blake in MASH said, clear as mother's milk.
So, but, there you go.
Yeah, so, but basically, we're in a waiting game to see what the Supreme Court is going to do. Dr. Sato, thank you so much. We appreciate your time.
Yeah, sure.
And talk to you again soon.
Sure.
Jeff Luce in for Aaron McCarty, Mike and McCarty, 101.7 FM, 710 Keel, and on the free Keel app.
Big stories of the day with Mike and McCarty on 101.7 FM and 710 Keel.
Doing some checking on our mayor. If you didn't hear, Mayor Tom Arsenault at the Shreveport City Council meeting yesterday started coughing and had to leave the meeting. Ended up, they said he fell out in the lobby out there.
Oh, my goodness.
And he, there's fire department personnel that stay out there.
Sure.
Just, I don't know why. The council
glad
meeting.
They did. Right, yeah.
But their personnel were there and ended up taking him. They called an ambulance in, took him to Willis-Knighton, and he's resting comfortably and doing well this morning. Very responsive. They said it was pneumonia.
Incredible, so, yeah.
Yeah, but our reports are he's doing well.
Because he looked like he's been doing very well.
Think I should call him? Think I should call
yeah,
him?
Yeah, give him a call. Yeah.
Aaron, and now if Aaron were here, she'd be calling him. She'd be texting him. Hey, you up?
call the Willis Hines switchboard.
I'm not calling the switchboard. I'm just going to call the mayor. I've got his number. We're going to check on him, see how he's doing.
Yeah. She's done such a good job. I really appreciate it.
Yeah. Very transparent. He's very open and always thinking about what's best for the city, not what's best for him and what's next. Right. Like every other politician, he's not a politician.
No, and the fact that he comes in and is with you guys so often, and then calls in as well on those times that
always,
he can't be here.
Always available when we reach out to him. So
yeah, I was very thankful when he was elected. I've known him for a long time. He wouldn't know me, but you know, he is. I have always had a lot of respect for him. We went to church together for a little while.
And okay,
so, yeah, just really thought that he was such a great guy, and so.
Let's don't say that.
Yeah, more.
He's doing great.
I meant was at the time that I actually was around him, and I, you know, so
right.
Bad choice of words. My bad.
Speaking of the city council meeting, there were discussions. Citizens got up and spoke about the Red River proposed Red River Expressway. That's the toll bridge. In South Shreveport, that's Tim James is looking to develop and connect South Shreveport to South Bossier.
Yeah.
And it'll be down around the Elm Grove area, but in South Shreveport, it's down, I think, around the port, but it goes up into like the 12 Oaks neighborhood and things.
Yeah, that's what it looked like. I saw they had four or five different proposed routes, and I don't know. I'm curious to find out if they've narrowed that down or if they've gotten it down to one now.
So we will talk with City Councilman Grayson Butcher, because that's his council district in Shreveport that it's proposed to go through, and find out his thoughts. That's coming up in the 8 o'clock hour. Jeff Luce in for Erin McCarty. She's doing great. Going to be back tomorrow. She's already texting me, so we're looking forward to her return.
Yes, we are.
Mike and McCarty, 101.7 FM, 710keel.com. Seven FM, 710 Keel. Mike and McCarty, Jeff Luce in for Erin. But I can't believe you texted me a picture of a plate of pancakes. How cruel is that?
I know. This has been the joy of being home in the morning.
Let me tell you something.
Out?
Don't get used to it.
Yes,
you enjoy it because tomorrow it all changes.
There's people out and about on mornings. They're out eating at restaurants. They're out talking to each other. When did this start?
Right? Why aren't they listening to us?
It's the weirdest feeling, something that you have never been able to do for years and years and years, and now you can get up and go to Strawn's on Uri and have breakfast. By the way, ladies, Strawn's on Uri is packed with dudes. I was the only woman in there.
You go through at 6:30 in the morning, it's going to be nothing but men in there. Because the women are home taking care of the family and getting the kids ready for school.
Yeah. And, you know, most of them are married.
Barefoot and pregnant.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, punch him for me.
She can't throw something at me so I can say that.
I'm looking forward to taking your place tomorrow at Strawn's. So.
Yeah. Don't shoot me a picture of pancakes.
It's coming.
They all appear to be married guys, and they meet up with their buddies and have breakfast before they go to the office. It's kind
absolutely
of weird.
I know my men's Sunday school class. Sometimes they'll go, "Hey, next Wednesday, guys are going to meet for breakfast." I'm like, "Come on, guys."
Yeah.
Let's do it at 5.
Guys, I'm doing good. This waking up early. I mean, today I woke up at like 6:15, and I went, "Okay, I'll get breakfast. That'll be cool again. My last day to go get breakfast." But you know, tomorrow I got to wake up at 3:30. So I'll be back in the studio tomorrow if you're wondering where I've been. And, you know, one of the days when I came in here, one of our listeners picked up the tab for me at Strawn's. I was like,
wow.
We miss you on the air. So he paid my bill, and I was like, oh, that was cool. I didn't come back today to try to get the bill fixed, but, you know.
Yeah, she walks in looking around for the same guy. Oh, I'm here again.
Yeah, where's my buddy? I do need to fix something for you, Mike, today, because I probably caused this yesterday when I started getting tips about Mayor Tom Arsenault having to be rushed to the hospital. I was watching the city council meeting because, you know, I love that. And
I watched it this morning. Thank you very much.
Really? I'm proud of you. And you can hear him coughing during some parts of the meeting. And then later I looked and he's gone. He's not in the meeting.
Mm-hmm.
So I started my tentacles, like, where'd the mayor go? What's he doing? And I thought maybe there was the Ronald McDonald House groundbreaking or ribbon cutting. He went to that. And no, that was earlier in the day. So I'm like, where did the mayor go? He rarely leaves a meeting early. And then I got word from, I'm not going to tell you who, but that somebody said to me, and it's a quote that was there, he fell out in the lobby.
Right. And that's where I got that.
Right. And I'm not blaming you. I'm blaming me because
me too.
everybody has questioned where I got that. And I'm not going to tell you where, but it was from somebody who was on the scene. And I think what happened is he was coughing and perhaps he was struggling to breathe. Several people told me he was struggling to breathe. They noticed that. And that maybe he sat down and kind of bent over. And then when you're the mayor, there's a hullabaloo around you.
Sure.
You know, when everybody realizes that the mayor is struggling to breathe, it's all hands on deck.
And they probably made him sit down or...
Yes. Yeah, I'm sure they pulled a chair and made him sit down. And they were attending to him, doing blood pressure, doing the whole thing that they all do.
Because fire department personnel was on site in the lobby during the meeting, right?
Yes, they're always down there. They always have fire personnel. Now, there's probably not an ambulance there, but they're real close. You know, they're right up the road. So they probably got an ambulance there right away. I believe he was transported by ambulance. That's what I was told by two people. That's not confirmed. I have not talked to the mayor yet. But you reached out to him. I'm really proud of you for this. That's a tough text. Seriously, Mike, that's a tough text to send.
Yes, it is. It was. And I was very apologetic, and I wanted to check on him. And I said, would you like to join us? I understand if not, obviously. I mean, that's an understatement.
Sure.
But we do want to know how you're doing. And he did text me back. And he said, I'm going to pass on joining you, but I'm doing very well and hope to go home today.
Well, good.
So,
well, maybe we
great
can have
news.
Two recuperating. Maybe we can have two recuperating people on the air tomorrow. Maybe he'll join us tomorrow for my first day back.
That would be awesome.
And I'm really proud because I was thinking, boy, I would be a tough text to send. And you know, I would do it because I have no shame.
Exactly. That's what I told Jeff and Ruben. I said, okay, I've been around Aaron too long because I'm going to text him.
And he did.
Yeah.
Bless his heart.
And if you're just waking up and you don't know what happened, the mayor was rushed to the hospital from the city council meeting. I'm told by his spokesman that he has pneumonia and that he's alert and doing fine. And so there's been no transfer of power because he's not sedated.
Okay.
So there's not like Tabitha Taylor is the interim mayor or the, what do you call it, the mayor pro tem?
Mm-hmm.
Because the mayor is up and he's able to, like you said, he's able to text and do business from the hospital.
Right.
So it's, there's been no kind of, okay, you take over, you're acting mayor now, as I understand it. So hopefully I'll shoot him a text this afternoon and we'll have him, we'll have two, you know, two, fresh from the hospital people joining us. So we'll see.
Well, you sound great. I'm assuming you feel great. Obviously, you're eating pancakes at 6:30 in the morning.
It's the weirdest feeling in the world to realize this whole world is going on while we're in our bubble. You know what I mean?
I do. I know exactly what you mean because I miss it.
And, yeah.
And when you get out in a restaurant, there's 30 people in there eating. Seriously.
Yeah.
And it's buzz and it's everybody's. I mean, and it's fun to listen to the tables because one table of men was talking about what was going on at City Hall. Another table was talking about the state fair. Another table was talking about the cold weather. You know, I mean, it's just It's really cool because, you know, I spy on people while they're talking. That's what I love to do. But it's just really weird. It's going to be good to be back. I have missed it. I'll tell you that.
Good.
The 3:30 I don't miss. But being in the middle of everything and making your life miserable, I just love that.
I can tell you as a listener, we have missed you all over Shreveport-Bossier. So we're all looking forward to you being back.
Jeff, thanks
a lot, Jeff.
Thanks
for filling
in.
Jeez.
I would miss you too.
Yeah.
I can't thank
I get
Jeff
when I get back after
Lewis
being gone a week, I get, "Oh, were you gone?" Sorry. Yeah.
Didn't even miss you.
Yeah. That's from awesome. Aaron and Ruben. Oh, were you gone? Yeah.
Well, to all the guest hosts, I mean, that's giving up a lot of your morning to come in and do that. And I know we pay them big money. I know that.
I feel bad about that.
Oh, it's such an honor. It really is. I mean, I'm telling you, I am very grateful that you guys let me come in.
Well, thank you for doing it. I appreciate it.
I'm glad everything went well. It sounds like it went even better than expected. It just all good reports. And so we're very happy for you.
Absolutely. Man, look at who's just pulling up at Strong's. It's three women. They must have heard me.
You got to go back in now. Yeah.
They're looking for their
where
husbands.
The men are. Yeah. Yeah.
You blew up their spot on the air.
Yeah, I did.
Going to work
I'm
early, my behind.
That. Yeah. Was it cheers when the phone rang and Carla goes, "Who's not here?"
Yeah.
Everybody's
handling it. Y'all have a great morning, and I'll connect with the mayor. Hopefully, we'll have him on tomorrow. We got Speaker Mike Johnson on tomorrow. Look at that! I'm bringing the big guns.
Look at you, yeah, absolutely, amongst others. So,
you bet.
So, go enjoy your last day of freedom, and we will see you dark and early, as Ruben says, tomorrow morning.
I will be there.
All right, thanks, Aaron.
All right. Uh-huh, bye-bye.
101.7 FM, 710 Keel.
Back Mike and McCarty on 101.7 FM and 710 Keel.
I was watching some of the Hurricane Melissa coverage. It hit Cuba this morning as a category 3. I don't know, about 3-4 o'clock this morning, I guess, or a little earlier than that. And I'm not making light but it has dropped category 3, at least. It's not as bad as it was.
Yeah, they said it was like 118 mile per hour winds compared to like 185 or something.
Yeah.
I mean,
which I'll take any good news.
Yeah.
But what I don't understand, why do we have to have meteorologists standing out in the middle of the beach in 120 mile an hour winds?
No,
I don't need you out there.
No. Yeah. You could do that at a green screen. I'd be totally fine.
In studio, mm-hmm. I'm sure there are cameras.
Right.
Cameras all over the world.
Right.
I never understood that.
No. And it is not a job I would want.
Ruben, we're going to send you out. There's a huge fire, and I want you to go stand in the middle of the fire and report from the building.
No, this is radio.
Sound effects.
And do you remember there was, I don't know, about a year or two ago, there was footage of a meteorologist, and he was outside, and he was fighting the wind, and he was standing there in the rain and leaning into it. And two dudes walking behind him in shorts.
Yeah, yeah.
Just walked behind him, was looking at him. Yeah. They're just normal, like they were out.
Eating a corn dog.
I've seen several like that where I guess they just decided it wasn't exciting enough outside. There was one several years ago of a lady. She's sitting in a canoe. She's in a canoe in the street. The streets are flooded out here, and then two people walk by and it's ankle deep.
Just ruin the shot. Little bit of reality for you. Yes. Exciting news in North Shreveport. The Walter B. Jacobs, if you haven't been out to the park the Walter B. Jacobs Nature Center out there.
A long time.
I haven't either in a long time. We used to take the kids out there.
Sure. Yep.
So much fun, and it's so nice. Well, it's about to be even nicer. We've got Rusty Scarborough hopefully going to join us here in about 10 minutes or so, giving us an update on that construction. We spoke with him in June, and he said, about October. So we're gonna follow up and see how that construction's going, and maybe we have a grand reopening date. Jeff Luce in for Aaron, Mike and McCarty, 101.7 FM, 710keel.com.
Let's get back to the show with Mike and McCarty on 101.7 FM and 710 Keel.
Caddo Parish officials gearing up for the reopening of the Walter B. Jacobs Nature Memorial Park. We'll talk with Rusty Scarborough, the director out there, coming up just after the break. Jeff Luce in for Aaron, Mike and McCarty, 101.7 FM, 710keel.com.
Now more breaking news and trending talk with Mike and McCarty on 101.7 FM and 710 Keel.
On the Jack Spring Electric Newsmaker Hotline with the Walter B. Jacobs Memorial Park, Rusty Scarborough, Master Falconer, joining us this morning. Rusty, good morning.
Good morning. Good morning to y'all.
Thank you so much for jumping on with us. We spoke back in June about the construction and the new building that's going up. How is that going? What's the timeline, and how are we looking?
Man, we're looking really good. We've had a couple of snags and some delays with getting stuff in from foreign countries like China and Canada. So we've had to push back our opening dates a little bit. We're doing an invitation-only opening for, like, the commissioners and the Jacobs family and such on December 4th. And then we're looking at opening early December, like right after the Christmas holidays.
Okay. And you got my address on that invitation-only, right?
Yes, sir.
So tell us about the new building and what people can look forward to, because this is phenomenal. And I think a lot of people don't even realize what we have out there.
No, you know, Walter Jacobs has been there. Next year will be our 50th anniversary of existence.
Mm-hmm.
And we have always offered state-of-the-art interpretive programs. But now our facility is going to match the type of programs we do. This facility is incredible. You know, when people say they're living the dream, I am literally living the dream. This is one of my passions. And the exhibits are phenomenal. Taylor Studios out of Illinois has done everything beyond what we anticipated. It's going to be a 13,000 square foot exhibit hall museum.
Wow.
4,000 square feet of exhibits, and you're going to literally walk into the forest indoors. One of our trees that looks like it doesn't look like it is a white oak tree is 28 feet tall. And then we have a blow down hollow log that you can walk through. You know, a lot of those exhibits that you go to at zoos and nature centers, they have those little tunnels that kids can crawl in and get face-to-face with the prairie dogs or whatever. But we wanted to involve everybody. So our blow-down hollow tree is big enough for adults to walk through.
That's fantastic.
And how cool is this?
Yeah, we've involved all of the senses. There's going to be smell patches where you lift a panel and smell what this plant smells like or what decomposing soil smells like. There's going to be, when you walk in, there's going to be a storm theater. So when you first walk in, it's going to tell you how elements change the forest, but how over the long run, the forest stays the same. So you'll feel wind blowing on you when the storm comes up as you watch the little intro video. And we have a nighttime theater where you'll hear animals that spend most of their time active at night. And then you'll get to see those animals in the dark forest. There's just tons. We have a lightning strike tree, and I mean,
Wow.
You feel it and hear it and see it. It's just going to be phenomenal. There won't be anything like this within a six-hour drive.
How cool is this?
I cannot wait to see this. This is going to be incredible.
Now it really is. It's state-of-the-art. I'm so proud of the parish that we have made the extra efforts in doing this well, and it is phenomenal. It's a beautiful facility. Our TBA architects have done a phenomenal job making it look very attractive. I was just telling one of my coworkers the other day, I said, you know, it's really weird when you think the back of the building is as or more attractive than the front of the building.
Now, you'll also be doing like birthday parties and things like that, celebrations. People can rent a room or the facility. Is that correct?
That is correct. The facility is quite expansive now. We also have an exhibit,
Now, you're saying expansive, not expensive.
Well, it wasn't cheap, I'll say that.
Right.
We have an event center right next door to the main exhibit hall. So the main building is 13,000 square feet, and then 8,600 square foot event center for business retreats and weddings and programs like that that will be available for rent. And then you can rent our rooms in the building. We have classrooms and a laboratory. You can rent those for business meetings, smaller style business meetings, and birthday parties and the like.
Now, Art in the Park.
We have two classrooms and a laboratory in the main exhibit building.
Yeah. Art in the Park has moved for this year, right? But will it be there next year?
Absolutely. Once we get open, we will move all of our special events back to the Nature Park grounds. We've held Art in the Park at Richard Fleming for the past 3 years, I believe it is, and it has worked well. We were not able to do Bugs, Bats, and Bones at the park this year, and with the move and all, we just decided to not try to do it this year.
Now, you're not a zoo, but you do have animals out there. And tell us about that.
So we have a few animals. We have good representation of the snakes that live in Louisiana.
My wife will be exhibit. Right out there.
Yeah. In our new exhibit, some of the snakes will be embedded in the experience. So they're not in a normal cage, but you'll be able to see them in their environments. And then we will have the other snakes in our one of our classrooms.
What will separate me from those?
Two panes of tempered glass.
Excellent.
And then we have built a brand new bird of prey aviary that will, it has 11 spaces. So for once, all of our birds are on display in one locale. It's a brand new circular building. You can walk around. It's just to the left of the main building. And then we still currently have our deer. It's, sort of an octogenarian. This deer has lived, I believe it's 13 years old now. So that's quite old for a white-tailed deer.
Now, tell us, for those that may not be familiar with Walter B. Jacobs Nature Park, where you're up near around Blanchard, tell us exactly where you are.
Yeah, we're on Blanchard First. So if you go into Blanchard and you see the post office, you turn right there on Blanchard Fir. Sometimes maps has it listed as Parish Road 4, but you turn and cross the railroad tracks and we are 3 miles from the post office on Blanchard Fir.
And the grand opening, your schedule had to push it back because of obviously some delays with some national and international product, but it's in December, you said the 5th?
The 4th of December will be the invitation-only soft open, and then the first week or so of we don't have a hard date for the major grand opening.
Oh, okay.
That will be as soon as sometime as soon as we come back from Christmas holidays. When the kids come back from their Christmas holidays, we'll be opening right after that.
Well, we will keep up with you and get a hard date on that.
Absolutely.
Now, you're going to have to come in because Aaron and Ruben have told me You're going to have to try the, what is it, Reuben? Red beans and lice? Red is beans, that what?
Yeah. some of the red delicious bug treats.
Yeah, red beans and yikes. We haven't done that in a few years since we've been closed, but I look forward to getting that back on. For our Bugs, Bats, and Bones program in October, we always have a Cafe Insecta, and I make I make red beans and yikes, which is gluten-free.
Are you saying yikes or yipes?
Yikes. Y-I-K-E-S.
Yes. Oh, okay.
So it has poached waxworm moths. Caterpillars instead of rice, it's got the poached waxworm.
Oh, so hell no.
It's very healthy. Oh, yeah.
I remember the scene in Shawshank Redemption when he pulls the little worm out of his oatmeal.
I can't even eat regular red beans and rice, so there's no way I'm coming near that.
Well, maybe we can entice you with the white chocolate waxworm macadamia cookies.
You would be mistaken.
Those were actually very good, if I remember right. Those were pretty good.
Yeah, they were telling me about the cookies, and so obviously waxworms are edible and probably have protein and are good for you.
Yes, yeah. All of those are true.
But it's not wiggling. At least it's not in your fingers wiggling, and then you just pop it in your mouth.
No, they've been poached and cooked and are all safe to eat, and they are high in protein. You know, a large portion of the world's population depends on insects for their protein.
I understand. but not here. But then, again, on the flip side of that coin, I'll eat 10 pounds of crawfish without blinking an eye.
Yeah, you know, I've always found that kind of funny about what people won't eat. And then in Louisiana, we eat all like bottom feeders, oysters, crawfish, shrimp.
Catfish even.
Yeah. Saw a story on people eating nutria. That is just absolutely disgusting. So,
no, it's pretty good. I've eaten nutria and beaver.
I apologize. Didn't mean to step on toes. Yeah.
Well, but then we'll look forward to that probably after the first of the year then, after you guys get up and going again.
Sure thing. I sure look forward to sharing this magnificent facility with the people of Northwest Louisiana.
Rusty Scarborough, director at Walter B. Jacobs Nature Park, thanks for joining us this morning.
All right. Thank you, Mike.
Talk to you soon. 101.7 FM, 710 KEEL.
Back with McCarty on 101.7 FM and 710 KEEL.
Well, if you missed it earlier, we did speak with Erin. She's doing great. Went and had pancakes. She sent me a picture of her pancakes. I hope she choked. No, I don't.
She just hopes she brings you some.
I hope she gets heartburn from her pancakes. No, yeah, right. Bring us some. Reuben, we got some folks out here wouldn't mind some pancakes.
Side order of bacon, yeah.
But we talked about yesterday at the city council meeting, Shreveport Mayor Tom Arsenault started kind of coughing and stepped out of the meeting and ended up being taken to the hospital, reportedly in an ambulance. Now, we did say at first that he collapsed out in the lobby. That is not true. He did not collapse. But medical personnel, fire department personnel were in the lobby. Apparently, they're there during city council meetings. And fortunately,
Thank goodness they were.
Yeah. And because they started when he kind of started coughing and couldn't get his breath. And so they administered care there and then called an ambulance and took him to Willis-Knighton. And they sent out a press release later that evening saying it was it's pneumonia.
Yeah, but he was very quick to respond to your text this morning.
So we did. I've been with Erin too long. I texted the mayor this morning just before 7.
Seven. Yeah.
This morning. I was very apologetic. I said, I can't believe I'm texting you when you're in the hospital. Please forgive me, but would you like? I've heard good reports, so would you like to let the people know that you're okay?
Yeah.
And he did text me back and
very
said,
quickly. Yeah.
Thank you so much. I'm going to pass. Understandably, he may be on oxygen.
Yeah, right.
But he said, doing great. Reports are great. In fact, hope to go home today.
Such great news.
So, yeah. Very good news. We've just talked about what a how blessed we are to have the mayor that we have right now.
His leadership has been fantastic.
So very transparent, very, very proactive for the city of Shreveport. He's, you know, And now I'm stepping into personal opinion territory. He's not a politician. I think he makes decisions. Even when he talked about the fee on the water bill, okay, it wasn't because he wanted to do a pet project or anything. He was trying to address blight, which is a major concern for the citizens and Caddo Parish administrators and such in the city of Shreveport.
And just finding a way to fund it.
I mean, trying to find a solution.
Right.
So, that wasn't the solution.
Right.
He recognized that, didn't take it personally, and moved on.
And that was one of the things that was so impressive is that when it came down kind of rejected or as a solid no, that he really did not, it wasn't like he was married to the idea. It was just an idea.
I'm just trying to come up with solutions. Mm-hmm. Let's keep working on it. I love that.
Me too. I appreciate that
very much. So good reports. The mayor's doing well. Hopefully he'll be back. And like Aaron said this morning, hopefully we'll have him on the air tomorrow and we'll have two recuperating little soldiers on the air.
Their hospital bands, you know.
We do have Mike Johnson, Speaker of the House, scheduled for tomorrow morning in the 7 o'clock hour. Of course, talking about the Schumer government shutdown, which is just a disgrace. Now, later on at this hour in the city council meeting yesterday, they had public discussion on the new toll bridge, the Red River Expressway, that's wanting to connect South Shreveport to South Bossier. And residents are really opposed to this idea.
Yes.
And we will speak with their councilman, Grayson Butcher, coming up after the news, top of the hour. I say that on purpose. Grayson Butcher, I know. But he will join us. Jeff Luce is in for Aaron. She will be back tomorrow morning. Mike and McCarty, 101.7 FM, 710 Keel. And be sure to download that free Keel app. FM 710 Keel. Mike and McCarty with Jeff Luce in for Aaron. She will be back tomorrow on the Jack Spring Electric Newsmaker Hotline. Shreveport City Councilman Grayson Butcher joining us. Grayson, good morning.
Hey, good morning, y'all. How are you doing?
Thank you very well. Doing very well. Appreciate you joining us. Yesterday, City Council meeting, there were open discussions on the Red River Expressway, which is, if people aren't familiar with that, it's the toll bridge being proposed by a private developer. It'll be basically a private road. Is that am I correct on that?
It's correct. It's by the same developer. I don't know if when you go to Gulf Shores now, when you get off there past Loxley, the expressway that goes to the beach, it's the same developer that developed that, Tim James.
Tim James. Yeah. And it'll be a toll bridge connecting South Shreveport to South Bossier. And in Bossier, it'll connect down around Elm Grove, if I'm looking at the one of those maps correctly. And then in Shreveport, it's just above the port. Am I right?
It'll come out around Leonard Road off of Highway 1 down off Fury Drive and then come across around Taylortown. It's what I've been told. So it'll kind of go through those fields back behind 12 Oaks and Esplanade and then kind of connect in there at Highway 1 and go across. That's what's proposed.
Well, therein lies the problem. 12 Oaks and Esplanade and those neighborhoods, the residents there are not happy, are they, Grayson?
They are not happy. And it's very understandable, but a little background, you know, I've been meeting on this pretty much the whole year. I've had one meeting with Tim James in person and then another group meeting with him. And basically all the city involvement is, the majority of this is going to be outside the city. So that's the first thing. So the Parish Commission really and the Bossier Parish Police Jury are really going to be the ones that are making the final decision on this. The only thing that we have is a small kind of triangle piece of property at the end of 3132 on Flournoy Lucas Road that was always for 20 some odd years, you know, the state and NLCOG has talked about extending 3132 all the way to the port. And this is the right of way that goes across 31 across Flournoy Lucas from 3132 that allows it to tie in. So this road would be, from what we understand, a replacement for the proposed 3132. So, you know, 3132 expansion predates both of these neighborhoods, just to be clear.
Okay. But one of the residents that spoke, one of the first ones, said had he known that this was in development, he would have looked elsewhere to buy his beautiful home. He stated that it was going to go 200 feet from his backyard.
Yeah, there is. I mean, that is true. But that 3132, in fact, I can't talk too much about it because the city is being sued by the developer of Esplanade because we wouldn't let him plot a bunch of lots back there back before my council term. So that's been 9-10 years ago, and we're still in a lawsuit over that, Mr. Larkin. So, you know, it's been on the books for quite some time that this was going to be an extension of 3132. Now, you know, in conversations with people, they've said, well, that'll never happen. And I said, well, you just never know. I mean, you get a new governor, you know, every 4 or 8 years, you get a new legislature every 4 or 8 years. You never know if that expansion is going to happen, especially with the growth that's going on at the port. That's, you know, the port's acquiring land all the time around there, and they're really a huge economic driver here in Caddo Parish, and they're doing it right down there. I mean, you just go and look at what it looks like over the last 15 years. So I don't want to say never that'll ever happen, but to me, and full disclosure, I don't live in Esplanade. I've lived in 12 Oaks. The city attorney lives in 12 Oaks. I have a lot in Esplanade. My wife and I are thinking about retiring there at some point. I don't know if that'll ever happen, but we do own a lot in Esplanade that's about, 200 yards from where this roadway is going to go in. So I understand their concern, but I also bought that lot with the knowledge of knowing that could potentially be a roadway going over there next to the bayou.
So as a councilman then, not as a property owner in the neighborhood, but as a councilman, do you support the Red River Expressway? Would you vote for?
At this point, I am not. What this allowed us to do is allow Mr. James to get an appraisal on the property and have access to the property to do surveys and all of this. And then I put an amendment on this that says that it has to come back. It has to come back to the council. It has to come back to the council for the 99-year right of way. There's several steps in here. Mr. James, when I first met with him, I said, okay, here's some conditions. 2-lane road, 35 miles an hour, no jake brakes, no hazardous materials, and berms between both neighborhoods or some type of sound devices that are not ugly like the ones on I-49.
Right.
And he agreed to all those conditions, and he also agreed to it yesterday. So any right of way that we have, that we grant him that access, I want that to be written in the right of way that he has to adhere to those standards, and he says that he will. So I don't want people to think this is not going to be an elevated interstate type highway. This is going to be something very similar to the Walter B. Bigsby in Bossier, the carriageway that's you know, a smaller road. That's kind of what it's been portrayed to me. Now,
well, isn't that a 4-lane?
Well, it's going to be a similar, like, carriageway. It'll be a 2-lane, but it'll be something that's not high traffic. Not high speed. It'll be a slower type. That's when I said that. It'll be something similar to that 35 miles an hour. Am I for it? I said in the meeting yesterday, you know, and I want y'all to think back in your minds, what was the last major thoroughfare that was done in Shreveport? The two that come to my mind are the 3132 expansion, Fern Avenue, and then I guess Southern Loop. But that's been 15 or 20 years ago.
Right.
We're not building any infrastructure. Now, you go to Bossier, they've built that parkway or the carriageway. They've built the Crouch Road extension. The Arthur Ray Teague now goes to the 71. I mean, they are building infrastructure, and we're not. So this is a way for us to build infrastructure to get to our most valuable economic driver in Caddo Parish without us having to spend any money. So there's no money coming from the city or the parish.
Okay, so what's the next step? The give vote for the appraisal, property appraisal, and then what's after that?
Well, there has to be a survey done, and then after the survey is done, to decide where the road is actually going to go. I'm kind of pushing for it to go a little bit over to the west to bring it, when it flies over, it will fly over 3132 with an overpass, or over Flournoy-Lucas with an overpass from 3132. When it flies over, I'm wanting it to fly over a little bit west of where the proposed road's going to go, but that's going to take acquiring some more land over to the, you know, to the west of it. But there's that that's got to be taken into consideration, then the appraised value, and then at that point it comes back with the final plans to the council for approval. But I suspect that would be probably sometime the first of the year, if not the middle of next year.
Where does the Army Corps in Section 408 fit into this?
Well, Mr. James said yesterday that they're in the approval process, I want to say, with the Corps. About the bridge, that they're almost done with that, but there's a lot of hoops to jump through. There's also a zoning issue that you've got, because Mr. Larkin sold Mr. James several residential lots, the ones that are actually in this lawsuit against the city. He sold them to Mr. James for the roadway, so those are going to have to be either rezoned or replatted on the PUD for Esplanade. So There's a lot more public input that's going to be going into this project before it comes to fruition.
Talking with Shreveport City Councilman Grayson Butcher. Grayson, let me switch gears for just a moment, because I was looking back on some notes, and we talked about the hotel on 70th, and I didn't pre-clear this with you. I apologize throwing this on you. What's the latest on that? Are they have they delayed again?
You scared me there, Mike. I thought we were going to look back at some notes. I didn't know what you're throwing at me, but that's an easy one.
Yeah. I'm not going to throw you a hardball here, but I know I wouldn't do that to you.
No, we're working with property standards and Mike Sepulveda permits right now. I'm just going to be honest. The last conversation I had with Mike about a week and a half ago was that the owner had left the country. Now I don't know if we found him, I know that a lot of the supervisors there have not been paid, or at least they weren't up until about a week and a half ago. The last conversation I had about it was at council yesterday. We were able to get the grass cut there. Property standards went over there and handled that. But you know, it to me is just another example of out of town people. Which we look, it's the same thing with the roadway. We encourage people to come and invest money in the city of Shreveport. We need that influx of economic development.
Sure.
But we need good actors to come in here. And it's obvious that there was something that just was off with this project from the get-go. Myself and former Councilman Nicholson went and took a tour of it, and it sounded great when they started it back during COVID or right after COVID or whatever.
Yeah, this has been years.
Yeah, I mean, well, Nicholson was still on the council, so I mean that's been over almost 4 years ago. So, we went and took a tour of it. It was going to be all this great stuff, and it was projected to end in a year, and we were going to have a pizza restaurant and all this stuff, and it sounded great. And then it just stopped. And you know, I don't know, if you look at the clerk of court, there's millions and millions of dollars that have been borrowed on that and other multiple properties that this guy owns, and according to some of the people that work there, he's left the country. Now I can't validate that, but it's just upsetting, because it just makes me think more of the Jolie apartments and the Oak Meadow apartments and the apartments up in Councilwoman Taylor's district, that we've got these out of town people coming in and buying this valuable real estate and then just letting it go, taking loans out on it and letting it go. So I hope that someone in law enforcement will start looking into these property owners.
So what can be done? What's next? I mean, is it just going to sit there unfinished, vacant for another 5 years?
Well, there is a process that we have to go through.
Sure.
Similar to any property. I would suspect that if we don't see progress on it at some point, it will go to the environmental court, and then we'll go through. But I mean, let's just we don't have the money to tear half the stuff down that we've got. So
right,
I don't know. I kind of wish that that we'd have known it was in this kind of financial trouble, because we could have put a police substation there, or you know what I mean.
Oh, yeah.
It's just it's just really sad to me, living in Shreveport all the years and going to Captain Shreve and passing that beautiful hotel and having Easter's there and Thanksgiving's there in that ballroom, that it's just pretty much been destroyed, you know. And I mean, from what Mike says, there may be a little bit of a mold or a mildew issue up in the upper, you know, upstairs area because it's been open. So it's you know, I just don't want to see it turn into another Holodome, but I think it's headed that direction. So we're working, we're trying to be a little bit more diligent with this one, and you'll see what happens. But we are myself and council, it's in my district, but it's right across the street from Councilman Talaferro's district.
Right.
We're both on top of it, and we're making sure that at least it's clean. So we've kind of got a ritual that we're checking it, you know, regularly ourselves. So
is there a way to sell it due to the unpaid taxes on it?
You know, I don't know. That's a good question. We have legal looking into everything that we can do. I've asked Mr. Edwards to dig into it and tell us what we can do legally. But, you know, of course, we want the owner to finish the project.
Of course. Right. Yeah, that'd be the best
thing. Yeah, we would like for him to, because we, you know, I say this all the time, the city of Shreveport has more real estate than God does, and we don't need any more real estate. But we need to push for this owner to finish it, and that's what our goal is right now.
Well, we'll stay on top of it. Grayson, thank you so much. Appreciate you coming on with us.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks for the call, and we'll talk to you next time. Good morning.
Talk to you soon. Mike and McCarty, Jeff Lucin for Aaron, 101.7 FM, 710 Keel.
Let's get back to the show with Mike and McCarty on 101.7 FM and 710 Keel.
We spoke with Rusty Scarborough getting an update on Walter B. Jacobs Park opening. Hear what he's got to say coming up in about 10 minutes. Mike and McCarty, Jeff Lucin for Aaron, 101.7 FM, 710keel.com.
Now more breaking news and trending talk with Mike and McCarty on 101.7 FM and 710 Keel.
Update on the grand reopening, if you will, Walter B. Jacobs Nature Park. Rusty Scarborough joining us just after the break. 101.7 FM, 710 Keel, Mike and McCarty.
Back to the big stories of the day with Mike and McCarty on 101.7 FM and 710 Keel.
On the Jack Spring Electric Newsmaker Hotline with the Walter B. Jacobs Memorial Park, Rusty Scarborough, Master Falconer, joining us this morning. Rusty, good morning.
Good morning. Good morning to y'all.
Thank you so much for jumping on with us. We spoke back in June about the construction and the new building that's going up. How is that going? What's the timeline and how are we looking?
Man, we're looking really good. We've had a couple of snag delays with in from foreign countries like China and Canada. So we've had to push back our opening dates a little bit. We're doing an invitation-only opening for, like, the commissioners and the Jacobs family and such on December the 4th. And then we're looking at opening early December, like right after the Christmas holidays.
Okay, and you got my address on that invitation only, right?
Yes, sir.
So tell us about the new building and what people can look forward to, because this is phenomenal, and I think a lot of people don't even realize what we have out there.
No, you know, Walter Jacobs has been there. Next year will be our 50th anniversary of existence.
Mm-hmm.
And we have always offered state-of-the-art interpretive programs. But now our facility is going to match the type of programs we do. This facility is incredible. You know, when people say they're living the dream, I am literally living the dream. This is one of my passions. And the exhibits are phenomenal. Taylor Studios out of Illinois has done everything beyond what we anticipated.
It's going to be a 13,000 square foot exhibit hall museum.
Wow.
4,000 square feet of exhibits, and you're going to literally walk into the forest indoors. One of our trees that looks like it doesn't look like it is a white oak tree is 28 feet tall. And then we have a blow-down hollow log that you can walk through. You know, a lot of those exhibits that you go to at zoos and nature centers, they have those little tunnels that kids can crawl in and get face-to-face with the prairie dogs or whatever. But we wanted to involve everybody. So our blow-down hollow tree is big enough for adults to walk through.
That's fantastic.
And how cool is this?
Yeah, we've involved the senses. There's going to be smell patches where you lift a panel and smell what this plant smells like or what decomposing soil smells like. There's going to be, when you walk in, there's going to be a storm theater. So when you first walk in, it's going to tell you how elements change the forest, but how over the long run, the forest stays the same. So you'll feel wind blowing on you when the storm comes up as you watch the little intro video. And we have a nighttime theater where you'll hear animals that spend most of their time active at night, and then you'll get to see those animals in the dark forest. There's just tons. We have a lightning strike tree, and I mean,
wow.
You feel it and hear it and see it. It's just going to be phenomenal. There won't be anything like this within a six-hour drive.
How cool is this?
I cannot wait to see this. This is going to be incredible.
Now it really is. It's state-of-the-art. I'm so proud of the parish that we have made the extra efforts in doing this well, and it is phenomenal. It's a beautiful facility. Our TBA architects have done a phenomenal job making it look very attractive. I was just telling one of my coworkers the other day, I said, you know, it's really weird when you think the back of the building is as or more attractive than the front of the building.
Now, you'll also be doing like birthday parties and things like that, celebrations. People can rent a room or the facility. Is that correct?
That is correct. The facility is expansive now. We also have an exhibit,
Now, you're saying expansive, not expensive.
Well, it wasn't cheap, I'll say that.
Right.
We have an event center right next door to the main exhibit hall. So the main building is 13,000 square feet, and then 8,600 square foot event center for business retreats and weddings and programs like that that will be available for rent. And then you can rent our rooms in the building. We have classrooms and a laboratory. You can rent those for business meetings, smaller style business meetings, and birthday parties and the like.
Now, Art in the Park.
We have two classrooms and a laboratory in the main exhibit building.
Yeah. Art in the Park has moved for this year, right? But will it be there next year?
Absolutely. Once we get open, we will move all of our special events back to the Nature Park grounds. We've held Art in the Park at Richard Fleming for the past 3 years, I believe it is, and it has worked well. We were not able to do Bugs, Bats, and Bones at the park this year, and with the move and all, we just decided to not try to do it this year.
Now, you're not a zoo, but you do have animals out there. Tell us about that.
So we have a few animals. We have a good representation of the snakes that live in Louisiana.
My wife will be right out there.
Yeah. In our new exhibits, some of the snakes will be embedded in the experience. So they're not in a normal cage, but you'll be able to see them in their environments. And then we will have the other snakes in our one of our classrooms.
What will separate me from those?
Two panes of tempered glass.
Excellent.
And then we have built a brand new bird of prey aviary that will, it has 11 spaces. So for once, all of our birds are on display in one locale. It's a brand new circular building. You can walk around. It's just to the left of the main building. And then we still currently have our deer. It's, sort of an octogenarian. This deer has lived
I believe it's 13 years old now, so that's quite old for a white-tailed deer.
Now, tell us, for those that may not be familiar with Walter B. Jacobs Nature Park, where you're up near around Blanchard, tell us exactly where you are.
Yeah, we're on Blanchard First. So if you go into Blanchard and you see the post office, you turn right there on Blanchard Fir. Sometimes maps has it listed as Parish Road 4. But you turn and cross the railroad tracks, and we are 3 miles from the post office on Blanchard Fir.
And the grand opening, your schedule had to push it back because of obviously some delays with some national and international product. But it's in December, you said the 5th?
The 4th of December will be the invitation-only soft open, and then the first week or so of we don't have a hard date for the major grand opening.
Oh, okay.
That will be as soon as sometime as soon as we come back from Christmas holidays. When the kids come back from their Christmas holidays, we'll be opening right after that.
Well, we will keep up with you and get a hard date on that.
Absolutely.
Now, you're going to have to come in because Aaron and Ruben have told me you're going to have to try the, what is it, Ruben? Red beans and lice? Red beans. That what?
Yeah. some of the delicious bug treats.
Yeah, red beans and yikes. We haven't done that in a few years since we've been closed, but I look forward to getting that back on. We, for our Bugs, Bats, and Bones program in October, we always have a Cafe Insecta, and I make I make red beans and yikes, which is gluten-free.
Are you saying yikes or yipes?
Yikes. Y-I-K-E-S.
Yes. Oh, okay.
So it has poached waxworm moths, caterpillars, instead of rice. It's got the poached waxworm.
Oh,
so it's
hell no.
It's very healthy. Oh, yeah.
I remember the scene in Shawshank Redemption when he pulls the little worm out of his oatmeal.
I can't even eat regular red beans and rice, so there's no way I'm coming near that.
Well, maybe we can entice you with the white chocolate waxworm macadamia cookies.
You would be mistaken.
Those were actually very good, if I remember right. Those were pretty good.
Yeah, they were telling me about the cookies. And so, obviously, waxworms are edible and probably have protein and are good for you.
Yes, yeah. All of those are true.
But it's not wiggling. At least it's not in your fingers wiggling and then you just pop it in your mouth.
No, they've been poached and cooked and are all safe to eat. And they are high in protein. You know, a large portion of the world's population depends on insects for their protein.
I understand. but not here. But then, again, on the flip side of that coin, I'll eat 10 pounds of crawfish without blinking an eye.
Yeah, you know, I've always found that kind of funny about what people won't eat. And then in Louisiana, we eat all like bottom feeders, oysters, crawfish, shrimp.
Catfish even.
Yeah. Saw a story on people eating nutria. That is just absolutely disgusting. So,
no, it's pretty good. I've eaten beaver.
See, I apologize. Didn't mean to step on toes.
Yeah. Well, then we'll look forward to that probably after the first of the year then, after you guys get up and going again.
Sure thing. I sure look forward to sharing this magnificent facility with the people of Northwest Louisiana.
Rusty Scarborough, director at Walter B. Jacobs Nature Park. Thanks for joining us this morning.
All right. Thank you, Mike.
Talk to you soon. 101.7 FM, 710 Key.
Back with more of Mike and McCarty on 101.7 FM and 710 Keel.
We did talk to Erin earlier this morning after she texted me pictures of her pancakes as we get here and don't ever get to get breakfast.
Still a little bitter about that, aren't you?
No.
No. You're hiding it well.
I'm glad she was able to get out. She's obviously doing great.
You know, all the smack she talks to our very own mayor, Tom Arcido, when he's out getting breakfast and we have to call him.
Are we interrupting your grits? Exactly.
And who's getting breakfast today, right?
Yeah, sending pictures.
Uh-huh. Right. So, I'm glad she's able to get out and enjoy that. Yeah. And it was funny, her perspective going, people are out living their lives when we're in our little bubble.
Yes. People the world just shut down.
Having breakfast. Yeah. They're not just sitting home or in their car listening to us.
Right. Yeah.
And it was very interesting. It was funny. But I'm glad she's doing great. I'm glad she got to have that time.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, it's just so quickly going to be back. And so that's really exciting.
Well, it's not quick. But
well, I mean.
It is tomorrow.
Yeah.
That's why I told you, I think I said earlier, this feels like Friday to me.
Yeah.
Because it's a lot of work.
Yeah, right.
She does a lot of stuff.
Yeah. She's great at her job.
Absolutely. And when she leaves here, she's not through, by the way. Yeah, she does watch those city council meetings. And she was texting me this week going, okay, watch this meeting. I'm like, oh, do I have to? Okay.
Who watches these?
Yes. City council meeting, Caddo Parish Commission meeting, school board meetings. She's watching all of them. Yeah. But that's what makes her good at her job.
She is great at it. And it'll be nice to have her back on the air.
Looking forward to having her back tomorrow. Shreveport Mayor Tom Arsenault doing well. I did text him this morning before 7. I can't believe I did it. Very apologetic, but he was very gracious, of course.
As he always is.
As he always is, yes. Saying he's doing great. He's hopefully going to be released and going home today.
Yeah, and hopefully maybe he'll be here tomorrow.
And may join us on the air tomorrow. Yeah. And for those that go, what? Released? If you haven't heard, he did have an episode at the city council meeting. He started coughing, went out into the lobby, ended up being taken to the hospital with pneumonia.
Yeah.
So he got treated in fluids and stuff, and so he's doing very well, never was sedated or out of control. So he'll hopefully be home tomorrow and maybe join us on the air, or home today and join us on the air tomorrow.
It'd be great to hear from him.
And we will have Speaker of the House Mike Johnson in the 7 o'clock hour tomorrow.
Love that guy.
Everybody local feels like
he's our best friend.
Right. I've known Mike for years.
We
have, and he's a great guy, and that's a testament to him. What was that?
Thanks, man.
Yeah. That's a testament to him and his character that everybody does feel like they're good friends with him.
Yeah, he's always so welcoming to everyone and does a good job of making people feel.
So he will join us in the 7 o'clock hour tomorrow. Of course, we'll be talking about the Schumer shutdown, amongst other things. So looking forward to visiting with him, having Aaron back. Thank you.
Thank you for
jumping in. Thank to
such an honor,
Lewis and Thomas Avalone at certain points. Thanks to Scott Hughes for coming in. I couldn't do it without you guys.
No, they did a great job, and I'm honored to be here. I enjoy it.
Well, make it a great Wednesday. Finally, fall weather's here. Mike and McCarty, 101.7 FM, 710keel.com.